next storyteller is no stranger to the Next to Normal stage. In fact, he's standing up here right now. John Bowen has lived an essentially unremarkable life. These are his words, not mine, I'm just saying. Mostly because nobody has ever remarked on it. He's never seen the Grand Canyon, never appeared in a major motion picture yet, and never had anyone at all, make a pilgrimage to meet him. But he has been to Graceland. He has seen a major league no-hitter in person, and he has seen snowfall out of a clear blue sky. He also has a story to tell. Please welcome John Bowen.
So,
excuse me.
So the context for this story is the first time I was ever left home by myself for the evening by my parents. I was maybe 10, 12 years old, somewhere in there. I'm going to go with 11. And they were out for the evening someplace. They were visiting some people that I don't think I knew, because all they left me was a number. They didn't leave me the name of the people that they were going to be visiting that night. My older sister, Laura, was, who knows where she was, at a sleepover. So here I am, 11-ish years old, and I'm home alone. And I do want to point out that this is before the movie Home Alone was made, so I had no template for how to behave here. So I'm home alone, and the evening is getting later and later and later. And you know how the power of suggestion works, right? You start thinking about something, and especially when you're about that age, and things are seeming spookier and spookier as the evening is going on, and you keep checking, and your mom and dad aren't coming home. And for whatever reason, I got it in my head that somebody was going to come through the front door of the house, and it was going to be a psycho killer, and they were going to moitalize me. And so I should say that that was a completely ridiculous idea, because my house had three doors. It had a front door, which opened up into the living room. It had a side door, which is the one that everybody always used. Like, the entire family always used the side door because that's where the garage and the carport were. And then if you went downstairs, there was a door that opened out into a patio in the backyard. So when mom and dad came home, they were going to use the side door like we always use the side door. The only people who ever used the front door were like guests to the house and like salespeople. Nobody ever used the front door. But I had this in my mind that, you know, the psycho killer was of course going to use the front door, right? Because they were going to be polite. And so I'm sitting there in the living room, and I'm watching TV, and, you know, it's getting later and later and later, and every few minutes my eyes just go to the door, like, TV, door, TV, door. And it eventually, you know, my mind sort of got stewed up with anxiety and paranoia, so like every, like, 5 seconds, I'm like, TV, door, TV, door, TV, door. And it was at this precise moment, the door opened. Now, we have these like superlative moments in our lives, right? Like the happiest you've ever been, and the proudest you've ever been, and the saddest you've ever been. And I don't know what any of those moments are for me, but I can tell you the fastest I have ever moved in my life was that moment. I was off the couch, out the living room, through the kitchen, down the stairs, through the family room, out the basement door, and into the backyard in like 2 seconds flat. I was gone. So I did not actually see the psycho killer. All I saw was that door open on its own accord, and I was out of there. Now, here's the problem. I'm this 11-ish-year-old kid. This is well before cell phones. I'm in the backyard. Now, the good news is, like, if the psycho killer comes into the backyard, I'm okay, because I can, like, lose myself like a rabbit. Like, this is my turf now. So it's dark, and I'm going to lose him. So I'm okay there. But, like, what am I going to do now? Like, there's a murderer in my house. So I make sure that the psycho killer doesn't come out and follow me, and he doesn't. And so I start looking around like, okay, so where am I going to go? And I see a light on in Mrs. Johnson's house. And Mrs. Johnson is the sweetest old lady anybody in this room has ever met. She was like 80-some years old, just the nicest old lady. But for whatever reason, it was like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, whatever it was, and a light was on in her house. And so I go over and I knock on Mrs. Johnson's door. I'm like, I need some help. Because what I wanted to do was, I wanted to call the number that mom and dad had given me so that I could call them and tell them to come home. Now, I was the kind of 11-year-old kid that when my folks gave me a number, I was like, I don't have to write this down. I don't have to write this down. Mine like a steel trap. I got this. So in my mind, I go over to Mrs. Johnson's house and I say, hello, Mrs. Johnson. I believe there's an intruder in my house. And I would like to use your telephone so that I can call my parents where they are. I've memorized the number, and if you could just give me a few moments, and I'm sure that's what it sounded like in my head. In reality, it was probably like, Mrs. Johnson, it's a house. I gotta call my parents. So she invited me in, the sweetest old lady, and I still feel terrible for whoever's number I actually called that night. Because these poor people heard me blubbering about my home, you know, how my home had been subject to a home invasion, and were my mom and dad there? And of course they weren't, and I had the wrong number, and it was so tragic. So anyway, so Mrs. Johnson and I kind of look at one another like now what? And I think at this point, like, the one part of this story that I really don't recall and that I really can't explain is what happened next. Because I guess I must have been trying to like play it really, really cool or something like that and say, it's okay, I'll be fine. Because I can't think of any other reason why Mrs. Johnson would have like let me leave, but she did. I don't know. So I'm in the neighborhood again. It's dark, I'm in backyards and I'm looking around. And so you know, her light was on, and then the only other light I see is this house like sort of at the fringe of the neighborhood, right? There's sort of like that sphere of influence that you have as a child where you know the people, and then there's like that sort of outer fringe. And so there was one of the houses down there. I sort of knew these people, but not really. And so I go up to their door, and I'm like, I need help. And so this turned out to be really cool because the mother of the family opened the door, and she listened very kindly to my story. And they happened to have a son who was like 20-ish or something like that. And she's like, Joe, go down to this boy's house and see if there's anybody there. Like, all right. So Joe, I mean, and I will always, like, I don't remember Joe. I remember his name was Joe. That's all I remember about it. But to his eternal credit, you know, he like had to get up from whatever he was doing and come help me. And he walks down the street to my house, and he's being very kind, and he's, you know, like talking to me. And meanwhile, I'm feeling pretty good because I'm like, I got muscle now, right? So I got like grown up. And at the same time, I'm trying to play cool. Like, yeah, you know, I'm sure it's fine, you know, whatever. And so we get back to the house, and Joe says, well, why don't we go up to the front door? Because that's presumably where the guy came in. And so we go up to the front door, and the first thing that we notice that's unusual is the door is only open like maybe 6-ish inches. And so it's sort of like, well, that's weird, because the psycho killer would have like burst through the door and wouldn't have taken the time to sort of turn and almost close it, but not quite, you know. That didn't sort of make sense. And so we go in, and the TV is still on, and the lights are still on from where I was. And Joe goes in first. He's like, I don't see anybody. He's like, hello, hello, hello. And so I'm following Joe around the house, and we're going around, and he's turning on all the lights, and we're checking out every room. And he's like, I don't see anybody here. I don't see anybody here. And I'm like, okay, I'm glad you're going first. And so eventually we check all the rooms in the house, and there doesn't seem to be anybody there. And so Joe's like, I don't think there's anybody here. And just at that moment, we hear a noise. And we hear, and Joe says, oh. And I'm like, oh. Like, I know what's going on. Joe says two words, and after about 3 seconds of thinking about it, I'm like, oh. He says, attic fan. The attic fan turned on. Now, if none of you had an attic fan, this was like poor people's air conditioning back in the day, where your dad would install a big old huge fan in the attic, and it would turn on, and you'd leave the windows open, it would turn on, it would suck all this air up into the attic, and it would pull fresh air from the outside. And my dad had just installed one of those, like, earlier that summer. And so what had happened was the attic fan had come on, sucked all this air, the front door must not have been closed all the way, and it got pulled open to my eternal horror. And so Joe explains this process to me. I'm like, ah, okay, I'm good. And so Joe's like, you good? And I'm like, I'm tough now. I'm good. I'm really good. So Joe takes off. My parents came home a little while later. I explained to them, you know, the whole story, and they were like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And so everything was fine. So, I mean, this is kind of a non-topical story, right? Because I apologize for it, because it wasn't paranormal. It was normal. It was logical. Physics were at work. And yet, despite that, I hope that you think that it did not, like the attic fan, suck. Thank you.